Welcome to KUOW Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this podcast version, the science is clear. Human beings are pumping too much carbon dioxide into Earth's atmosphere. Side effects include an increase in extreme weather situations, forest fires, loss of sea ice and sea level rise, and time is running out. So, what can we do to address the problem? Humanities Washington gathered a climate scientist, a Seattle City Council member, and an environment journalist to discuss consequences and solutions. Their Think and Drink conversation took place at Naked City Brewery and Tap House on March 30th. You can hear the full conversation on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. In this excerpt, you'll hear KUOW's Ashley Ahern provide a quick list of facts on the cost of climate change in Washington State in 2015. She's followed by UW's Climate Impacts Group Director, Amy Snover. Thanks to Anna Tadashev for our recording.
2015, Washington had more than 1,500 wildfires at a cost of more than $300 million to deal with them. So for us here in Seattle, we may not have been directly impacted, but the rest of the state was feeling that for real. In 2015, for the first time, the U.S. Forest Service spent more than half of its budget fighting fires. So those are dollars that would have gone to things like forestry monitoring, science, infrastructure upkeep, like roads so you can get to the hiking trails you know and love, staff, the kind of stuff that we rely on our federal agencies to provide for us. That money's going to fighting wildfires now. And it's projected to go up to 2/3 of the budget by 2025. In 2015, every county in the state was declared in a state of emergency at some point during the year, either from flooding or wildfire. Every county in the state, statewide. Washington Department of Agriculture estimates the drought cost farmers more than $300 million last year. And that's to say nothing of ocean acidification impacts on our shellfish industry, losses to the ski industry, salmon fishery, low river flows, the rest of it. So with that, I want to turn it over to Amy Snover on that exciting, upbeat note. Point being, the costs are real, and it would behoove us as a society to be thinking about what we do about that and what we can expect. So take it away, Amy. Thanks.
Great. Thanks. Hey, thanks for coming out tonight on a sunny night. I guess I have to begin by continuing the doom and gloom. But there, yeah, we chose the venue wisely. So when we think about climate change, for a long time the question was, are humans going to cause climate change? And I'm sure many of you know that that is no longer the question. We know that we have caused it. We know that we're causing more. And so the appropriate questions, the ones we're dealing with all the time now, are how fast will climate change? What will it mean for us, and what can we do about it? And so I want to talk really briefly about what we might expect here in the region and sort of what it might look like in the near and longer term. So when I think about the impacts of climate change, I think of sort of three major buckets. One is I think about how it's going to affect the environment we live in. And by that, I mean everything from how warm it is when you go outside to what grows in your garden to what you experience when you go to the mountains, if you hike or ski, what the coast looks like and where you experience river flooding or which fish you catch in the river. So your environment. And then I also think about the management and availability or cost of resources. So we depend a lot on natural resources in this region, from hydropower, drinking water, irrigation water, our energy, our transportation systems, our food systems, and all of these will be affected by a changing climate because they were built in anticipation of the previous climate, not the one that's coming. And then finally, the impacts and costs of dealing with extreme events, and Ashley gave us some numbers of those. So I think about those three buckets, but I'm going to just sort of walk you through the logic of what we understand about impacts on the region. So we always back up and say, what do we know is going to change outside sort of forcing the local changes in the environment? We know there's going to be substantial warming. Every single scenario we look at shows warming. No matter what we do about greenhouse gas emissions, we're going to warm. And by the 2050s, we're going to be warmer than we've experienced in most of our recent past. So we're talking about a 4 to a 5 degree warming by the 2050s in this region, depending on how much we actually emit. Increasing heavy rainfall, so the heaviest rain events getting heavier. Sea level rise, as Ashley mentioned, around a couple of feet by the end of the century, but it could be as much as 6 feet. Ocean acidification, and continuing natural variability. So forever and a day, we're going to have to say, yeah, that thing that just happened, it was a combination of climate change and natural variability. But as time goes on, we're going to see more and more and more of those when they're caused by climate change. So one of the major ways that climate change impacts play out in the region is through the impact on our mountain snow. And I imagine a lot of you have already heard this story, right? So we depend on mountain snow to transfer water from when we get it in the wet winter months to when we need it in the dry summer months. We built our reservoirs pretty small because we had mountain snow. We have ecosystems that are adjusted to that timing of water availability. We have really, really sensitive snow to warming because it's pretty low elevation. It's called warm snow. It's a lot of our snow's near the freezing line, so it doesn't take much for it to warm for us to lose it. And if anybody skis at Snoqualmie Pass, they already know that story, right? So if we take the global climate change scenarios and look at what they mean for the region, this is a map for the Puget Sound. We see that as time goes on, if you could click the next one. So by the 2040s, the redder the color, the more loss there is. By the 2040s, we're seeing about a 30% loss in the peak snowpack, and then by the 2080s, about a 55% loss in peak snowpack. And this matters because so much depends on water. And so no matter what I'm talking about, I always start with this because all the other impacts sort of flow from this. And this is something we're really confident in, that this is, on average, going to be what it looks like. We'll still have snowy years and even drier years, but on average, when it warms, we lose snow. So then I just want to walk through some of the impacts at a 30,000-foot level so we can get onto the conversation. In general, the take-home message for the water side of things is less water when we need it and more water when we don't is what we can expect. So the less when we need it, right, is, well, if you care about skiing or if you care about natural snow melt increasing stream flow for salmon or other cold water systems, or if you care about the delivery of water for irrigation water supply or for drinking, we'll have less of that available. We'll have more water when we don't need it, and that means more fall and winter flooding. And so I have a picture up there of the Chehalis River, which is famous for flooding and closing I-5. And it closes I-5 for a couple days, and it costs $15 million in travel costs and delays alone, not counting economic consequences of not getting the goods delivered. So this increase in flooding, decrease in summer water supply, increased stress to salmon and other cold water ecosystems, and increased risks of landslides are some of the changes that result from these changes in hydrology. Another major way that climate change is going to play out in the region is through changing forest disturbance in geek speak, or the combination of wildfire, droughts, and insects. So we know that wildfire risk is related to climate, and the drier it is, the higher that risk is. And so under a changing climate, we can expect much greater increases in wildfire risk, double to quintuple, depending on the scenario you look at, and much greater risk of big fires. So we just mentioned we've had, in 2014, a record-breaking year of wildfires, in 2015, a record-breaking year of wildfires. And, you know, the wildland managers don't expect that to be stopping anytime soon. So can you go back? The bottom left is a photo from the rainforest on the Olympic Peninsula, the Quinault, that was burning this summer. So this is the environmental changes that we'll experience in places we go, but there's real human costs from air quality, and then there's also a lot of costs that are borne by us through government responses to this. Wildfires, damage to energy transmission, for example, in the Carlton Complex fire. So one other key area, when we think about sort of aggregating these impacts in the main areas, one is the ones driven by hydrologic changes, one is by wildfire changes, and one is by coastal changes, which are the combination of sea level rise, river flooding, coastal erosion, and changes in the chemistry and biology of the coastal waters. And so I have a snapshot of a bunch of pictures up here to sort of give us, in all of these areas, the threads that climate change pulls are many and numerous. So we're talking about increased risk of erosion for coastal properties, which also translates to increased risk for really important coastal habitat for spawning salmon and other creatures. Changes in ocean chemistry leading to acidification and challenges with shellfish. And actually, sports fishermen rejoice. We have brand new species coming up here that we can catch now and then. There was actually a blue marlin off the coast at one point. I put a map up of downtown Seattle showing the areas projected to be inundated under different sea level rise scenarios. And this is a sort of segue into what our conversation is going to be about later, which is there's a vast number of cities, counties, state agencies, federal agencies who are already thinking about these risks, understanding what they mean for them, and preparing their responses. So that map of Seattle, the Seattle risk map, is actually developed by Seattle Public Utilities itself. So I want to wrap up with that because I wasn't supposed to talk very long, and nobody came out to really see a PowerPoint in a bar. I guess you did because you're here and you just saw a PowerPoint in a bar. But you were hoping it would be short, and it was. So I just want to leave you with this for now, which is that when we think about reducing the risks of climate change, we have to remember it's a two-sided coin. So we talk a lot about reducing the core causes, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, which is the essential part of the whole issue. How much climate change are we going to cause and how fast? And that's all about our energy choices, our energy uses, and our consumption patterns. And I think that's what Councilmember O'Brien's going to talk a lot about. We also have to identify and prepare for the impacts. Sometimes people call that adaptation or preparation or risk management. And those impacts are going to be widespread because climate touches everything we do, and they're to some degree inevitable. What's not inevitable is how hard they hit us. That depends on whether we're looking for them, whether we're planning ahead and preparing for those risks.
That's it for this podcast of Speakers Forum. Again, you can hear the full version on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. And thanks to Anna Tatashev for our recording. Tune in again soon for more from Speakers Forum.